WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Thank you, Digital Henry. Good morning. It's the 23rd of June, 2021. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford. I'm going to start with 201st episode of the Grand Hour. Well, first of all, let me apologize. We weren't on last week because the station had its annual power shutdown, and it wasn't back up enough time. I just didn't want to put together a show and not have it be able to be heard. So anyway, enough about that. This first episode is 678 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, the Look Before You Leap matter, had an original air date of the 28th of February, 1960, starring Bob Bailey and Burgess Meredith. Thanks for listening.
Johnny Dollar.
30 days had September,
April, June, and November. All the rest have 31?
Except.
Okay, except so. Today is February 27th, so this month we get cheated out a couple of days or two. So what, and who are you?
Oh, now, Johnny, after all these years.
Oh, sure. Pat McCracken, Johnny, Universal Adjustment Bureau.
Right, and I... Hey, you mean I sound like that over the phone?
Yeah, just like one of the pallbearers at your own funeral, Pat.
Okay, let's get down to business.
Yeah, why not? But what's the worry about February being a little short on days this year and every year?
Plenty, because of something that happened almost 6 years ago. A case that even the famous Johnny Dollar couldn't solve.
Oh, look, if you ever start adding up all the cases I haven't solved... Hey, wait a minute, 6 years ago?
That's right.
Bernard Margot.
That's right.
Barney the Bum.
Yep, the chief hoodlum who died when he jumped off the Triborough Bridge in New York back there in 19...
Hold it, Pat. You know as well as I do that whole thing was a phony so that Big Mike Killian could collect Barney's $300,000 insurance, remember?
Well, I seem to remember you're spending a few thousand of the company's money trying to prove that. But I also remember you didn't even get to first base.
Because I couldn't find Barney, couldn't find where he'd skip to.
But if you could now, before the 1st of March, you'd save the company the $300,000.
Pat... You mean you got a lead on him?
Maybe. Want to come over here and talk about it?
Brother, I sure do.
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Munch, munch, munch a bunch of Fritos. Corn chips, it's not polite to smack your lips, but you can't help it with Fritos. Corn chips, munch, munch, munch a bunch of Fritos. Corn chips.
Next time you want something to munch on, try Fritos. They're so crisp, so tasty, so good. You'll see right away why we say Fritos are the corn chips made to munch. Fill a big bowl with Fritos next time you settle down to watch your favorite TV program. Boy, there's contentment in every munch.
Munch, munch, munch a bunch of Fritos, corn chips.
Fritos are golden chips of corn as nutritious as they are delicious. So full of good, crisp flavor, such good for you nourishment. They're the ideal snack for grown-ups and children alike. Get a bag of Fritos corn chips today and munch a bunch. F-R-I-T-O-S, Fritos corn chips.
Munch, munch, munch a bunch of Fritos, corn chips.
And now... Act One of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Look Before the Leap matter. Barney Margot, Barney the Bum, a strong arm for Big Mike Killian. and his case had made me look like a fool. So, expense account item one, $1.25 for a cab to Pat McCracken's office.
Now, this is one you'd really like to clean up, isn't it, Johnny? Sit down.
Pat, Eastern Trust and Insurance were crazy in the first place when they issued a big policy on the cheap mobster.
I know.
When they let him name Big Mike Killian as the beneficiary. Well, anybody with half a brain should have known something was wrong with it.
I know, Johnny.
And then to top it all by waving the suicide clause.
I know. The minute we found out about it, we asked them to cancel it, but we were too late. Barney Margot had apparently jumped off the bridge. And neither you nor the police nor anybody else at that time could prove that he hadn't.
And just because some of Barney's clothes were found in the water, because of that phony suicide note he left on the bridge.
Don't forget the witness, Johnny, the girl who saw him alone out there on the bridge before he disappeared.
Yeah, I remember.
Who also saw something, presumably his body, topple off into the water.
Mady Prescott was her name.
Yeah, that's the one. And since Barney had been seen going onto the bridge but didn't show up after what she saw...
So they took Big Mike Killian's word for it that Barney made the leap.
That's right.
Whereupon Big Mike immediately claimed the insurance.
However, Johnny, Killian has not been paid that $300,000, nor will he be if you can produce Barney Margot in time.
Yeah, but how much time?
Well, according to the final decision of the courts while we were fighting this payment, unless he's picked up before March 1st...
Oh, are you kidding, Pat? Today is the 27th of February, and
yes,
according to that little rhyme you tried to charm me with over the phone,
yes,
tomorrow is the last
Johnny,
possible chance.
Johnny, will you listen?
Well.
The girl, that Mady Prescott, just came back from Paris.
Paris? Well, what's that got to do
she
with it?
She made a report to the police, and they passed it on to us. She says that only a few weeks ago, right there in Paris, she saw Bernard Margot.
Oh?
Yeah. Thanks to all the international red tape involved, there's no way we can possibly get him back here in time.
Well, even so...
What's more, all the proof in the world that he's still alive is no good unless he himself is brought back to New York.
Oh, now, wait.
Well, that was the decision of the courts. That's the way it stands.
Oh, great.
But, Johnny, if you somehow, and believe me, not only I, but the police will close their eyes to whatever method you might have to use, if you could somehow get him back here in time, well, I'm thinking about a $10,000 fee in addition to your expense account if you produce him. Nothing, of course, if you don't.
Before March 1st, it's impossible.
Yes, I know.
So, Pat, I'm going to try.
Are you smoking more now, but enjoying it less? Have a real cigarette. Have a Camel. Are you looking for flavor and mildness? Have a real cigarette. Have a Camel. The best tobacco makes the very best smoke. Have a real cigarette. A real cigarette. A real cigarette. Have a Camel.
If you're smoking more today but enjoying it less, try Camels. The Camel blend of costly Turkish and domestic tobaccos has never been equal for rich flavor, easygoing mildness, real smoking satisfaction every time you light up. The best tobacco makes the best smoke.
Have a real cigarette, a real cigarette, a real cigarette, have a Camel!
And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Look Before the Leap matter.
Item 2, 1050, taxi, a train to New York, and a cab to the 10th floor apartment of Miss Mady Prescott.
I know, Mr. Dollar, my testimony that I'd seen him on the bridge and that I'd seen him drop off into the water...
Well, that testimony, Miss Prescott, may cost the insurance company $300,000 unless I can produce Barney Margot before March 1st.
Before March 1st?
Yeah, and you say that you saw him in Paris.
At an antique shop run by a Monsieur Dubesson.
Dubesson?
What?
Nothing. Go on.
Well, I was startled, to say the least. But I'm certain it was he. Absolutely sure of it.
Well, you were also pretty certain you'd seen him go off that bridge.
I know, but I must have been wrong at that time.
So you could also be wrong now.
I know.
But it's the only thing I have to go on. And you know, since you mentioned the name Dubesson... Well, thanks very much, Miss Prescott. Dubesson's a fence there in Paris. Exactly the sort of character Barney the Bum might tie up with. Perhaps even as a contact for Big Mike Killian. As I stepped into the self-service elevator to get back to the street, I wondered. But I didn't wonder for long about anything.
Okay, Jimmy, push that stop button.
Yeah, sure, Milford.
Between floors.
Yeah.
All right, what's the idea?
Johnny Dollar, huh?
Maybe.
So there's only one reason you'd be calling on the Prescott date.
What of it?
Big Mike didn't like you interfering when poor Barney died. He don't like it now.
Oh, well, that's just too bad.
In fact, he don't like you. Now, Jimmy, come
on. No!
Yeah. Now, James, leave us dump this stiff in the basement.
It was the building superintendent who found me there in the basement, got me back on my feet again. Item 3, 10 cents for a call to one of the transatlantic airlines. Item 4, 31 bucks for a cablegram. Then item 5, a dollar for a cab to the 18th Precinct headquarters, my old pal Randy Singer.
Sure, Johnny. A couple of Big Mike Killian's boys must have been. You want me to have them picked up?
No.
Only I warn you, Killian will have an alibi for him, sure as gun.
Don't worry about him. I'll take care of that pair myself.
Well, now,
and
Johnny.
And, Randy, all I ask is that you stand by until I get back here from Paris.
Paris?
Yeah, somehow I got to perform a miracle. I got to bring Barney Margot back here before March 1st. Today's the 27th. That means I have until midnight tomorrow night. So long, Randy.
Johnny, wait a minute.
Sorry, but every second counts, and I just have time to catch a plane.
Johnny, listen.
So long, baby, and wish me luck. I'm going to need it.
Act 3 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment.
Meet star Stuart Irwin.
Nothing's worse for an actor than a nasty cold. To feel better quickly, I take wonderful four-way cold tablets, the fast way to relieve cold distress.
Right. Tests of all the leading cold tablets proved four-way fastest acting. Four-way starts in minutes to relieve muscular pains, headache, reduce fever, calm upset stomach, also overcomes irregularity.
Take my advice. For your next cold, take four-way cold tablets, the fast way to relieve those cold miseries.
Four-way, only 29 cents.
And now here's a word about another fine product of Grove Laboratories. Does dandruff dull your hair, leave scalp itchy? Get Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo and get rid of unsightly dandruff in 3 minutes. 3 minutes with Fitch regularly is guaranteed to keep embarrassing dandruff away forever. Apply Fitch before wetting hair. Rub in 1 minute. Add water. Lather 1 minute. Rinse 1 minute. Every trace of dandruff goes down the drain. 3 minutes with Fitch. Unsightly dandruff's gone. Fitch can also leave your hair up to 35% brighter. Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo. And now, Act 3 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Item 6, $420 for a plane ticket to Paris. When we landed at Orly, I put in a call to Louis de Marsac, who calls himself a Chagri. If anyone in all of Paris knows the underworld, believe me, it's the Gray Cat. But I got no answer. Item 7, then, $2 American for a cab to the so-called antique shop of Francois Dubuisson. It was there that Mady Prescott swore she'd seen Barney Margot. I knew better than to expect any real help from him, but he was my only chance and time was running out.
Ah, bonjour, monsieur. Qu'est-ce que vous devez... Ah, monsieur Johnny Dollar, the meddling American.
That's right, Dubuisson.
And to what does the fair city of Paris owe the honor of your presence, eh?
Bernard Margot.
Margot?
That's right. I want to know where he is, where I can find him.
Now, by what could you possibly think I might know this Bernard Margot?
Oh, look, don't start beating about the
and
bush.
And do you think that I would tell you anything of him if I did?
Now, look, Dubuisson.
I have not forget the trouble you have made for me when you last come here. No. Maurice.
Monsieur?
Oh, no, you don't. Just stay where you are, Maurice.
Pardon?
Monsieur Dollar.
I suppose this gorilla is your bodyguard?
Not at all.
Well, if he tries to get rough, are you trying any tricks to us?
You are a smart man, Monsieur Dollar, but also a fool.
Yeah.
Maurice, you have my permission to leave now to arrange the funeral of your friend.
Ah, bien, bien.
You see, your alarm was for nothing.
Okay. But now, about this Barney Margot.
I told you I knew nothing of him. And even if I did, do you forget, monsieur, that you have no authority here in France?
Now, you listen.
In other words, why do you waste your time? When you know that all you will learn from me is nothing.
Threats, even the promise of a bribe, got me nowhere. So I left him, and again I put in a call to Louis de Marsac, my underworld contact. This time, the line was busy, at least it meant he was home. So item 8, 320 American for a cab to the dingy little apartment at the far end of the Rue du Pont de la Moule. It's one of the most disreputable-looking buildings in the whole city. Dirty, squalid, falling apart at the seams. And, of course, Le Chagris had to live at the top of four long flights. When I finally got up there, feeling slightly winded, I noticed that his door at the end of the gaslit hallway was half open. And I could see him inside, lying on the floor, the telephone dangling beside him. Hey, Louis. Demarsac.
Ah.
Huh?
Eh bien.
Maurice.
Oh, vous, monsieur. Oh.
Hello, I'm Burgess Meredith. Did you know there are over 3 million persons in America who are hard of hearing and not doing anything about it? Maybe you or some member of your family is hard of hearing. Well, fortunately, I've never had this problem. Some of my friends and family have. Now, a few years ago, your excuse might have been that you didn't want to wear a bulky hearing aid. But today, it's a different story. I've just seen the new Super 60 hearing glasses developed by Mako Electronics. If I hadn't known they were hearing glasses, I would have guessed them to be regular eyeglasses. It's a wonderful way for any hard of hearing person to conceal a hearing loss. There are styles for both men and women. For an interesting free booklet on hearing glasses for yourself or a friend, stop in at Mako or write to Hearing Glasses, CBS, 485 Madison Avenue, New York. Don't wait until your hearing gets worse. It may be too late. Send for your booklet today. Write CBS, 485 Madison Avenue, New York.
And now, Act Four of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Only my sudden arrival had kept Maurice from killing Louis de Marsac. It got me that clout on the head. But Maurice was gone now. After working over Louis for a few minutes, pouring some cognac into him, he finally came around.
Oh, Monsieur Dollar.
Yeah, that's the stuff, Louis. Just let me help you out here on this couch.
Oh, but so much pain.
Yeah, you really got it, brother.
Only for you, my oldest, my dearest friend, would I suffer so?
Yeah, here, take another slug of this.
No, alas. Even that will not mend my broken head.
Would a couple of $100 American help?
Eh? Oh?
Did you get my cablegram?
Oh, oui. And I found him for you.
Barney? Where?
It is worth perhaps $500.
$300.
But, monsieur...
Okay, $350. Where is he?
But if Monsieur Dubuisson finds out that it was I who took care of Barney Margot...
He already knows that I'm here. That's why he sent that Maurice character to arrange for a funeral.
Funeral?
And he was talking about your funeral. But now, wait. You say you've taken care of Barney the bum?
It would perhaps be worth a little extra if I were to have him all tied up and waiting for you.
What? Listen, if you can actually deliver him to me, I'll give you $1,000 right now.
But I can, monsieur.
Where is he?
And perhaps $2,000 if I've arranged a way to get you both out of the country back to the United States without anybody knowing about it.
Yeah, $2,000. I'll cable it to you if I can get him back to the States before midnight tonight.
Oh, before midnight, you see?
New York time.
Well, we can try, monsieur.
Good, then let's get going.
But first... Perhaps I'd better accept the $1,000 just in case.
All right. All or nothing. $2,500 if I make it.
Ah. Then come. First we get Barney out of the closet here.
Out of this closet here in your room?
But of course.
Well, I'll be.
And then we drive to the airfield where the plane is waiting for you.
We'd never have gotten away with a thing like this back in the States, or anywhere else I can think of, all without the help of Le Chagris. After making sure that Barney was securely bound and gagged, we piled him into a car that de Marsac said was his, only I doubt it. We headed westward through Versailles to the city of... Well, maybe for diplomatic reasons, I better not mention the name of it. Anyhow, their little airport was an old amphibian plane waiting for us. This time, it was the pilot I had to haggle with. $7,000 for the trip. But there were $300,000 at stake. Item 9 for a transatlantic call to Randy Singer in New York.
no, no. Listen, Johnny, this is too wild, too crazy.
You got the ID for this plane? You've written it down?
Well, you, sure I have, but Johnny...
Then all you have to do is get us a clearance to land, if we make it.
You're out of your mind. This stunt could cause an international incident that even the United Nations couldn't...
You want Barney the bum, don't you?
Well, of course we
do. Then I'll lay him right in your lap if you'll hang up the phone so that we can make our takeoff.
Johnny, listen to me.
Randy, I haven't got any more time to talk, because if I don't get Barney back there before midnight tonight...
No, Johnny, no, listen.
See you in New York. I hope. Oh, that plane trip was something I'll never forget. Sure, on the ground, the big amphibian looked pretty good. But up in the air, it shuddered and shook like the old crate it really was. And I wondered if she had enough gas aboard. What sort of double-talk the pilot used to keep us from being ordered down, I'll never know. Any second, I expected a bunch of fighter planes to start buzzing us. But somehow we made it. And Randy, bless his heart, and I don't know how he did it. Randy got us a clearance to land. Matter of fact, he even had an escort waiting for us to haul Barney off to the clink and take me back to the office at headquarters. Yeah, by some miracle, it all worked out. Except for one thing.
But so help me, Johnny, if you ever again try to pull a thing like... falling asleep again, huh? Just like you did all the way in from the airport. Well, I can't say that I blame you. Mission accomplished, all that sort of stuff.
Mission accomplished, sir.
Huh?
Did you happen to notice what time it was when we sat down at the airport?
Sure, right after midnight, 12:07.
Just exactly 7 minutes too late.
Too late?
Ruling in the courts, don't you get
Johnny.
It, Randy? In order to save the company paying off that 300,000 clams, I had to get him back here before midnight. Last night, February 28th, before the 1st of March.
Oh, no,
so
wait.
The fortune I've run up in expenses has to come out of my own pocket.
Johnny.
And I thought I was going to make myself a cool $10,000 fee.
Listen.
You were right, Randy. I should have known better. It was crazy. The whole idea was completely crazy right from the beginning.
Johnny, will you listen to me?
If I had any sense, I'd blow my brains out 7 minutes after midnight.
That's right, February 28th, so you've forgotten just one little thing.
Yeah.
This just happens to be 1960.
So what? I had to get that punk back here before the first of...
Yeah. Leap year.
Randy.
That's right. So today just happens to be the day before the 1st of March, February 29th.
Oh, no. You mean I made it after all? You mean I... Oh, no.
It's a fact, Johnny. Fact.
You know something? I should have blown my brains out for forgetting that extra day this month, this year. But instead, I'll just take that $10,000 in fees. As for the expense account, hold your hat. $9,571. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment.
Constipation is something people don't talk about much, but it can be a problem for anyone, even doctors. And when constipation occurs, it's interesting to see just what doctors consider important about a laxative they might use or recommend. Well, a majority of the doctors we heard from had this to say.
A laxative should be effective, gentle, as close to natural acting as possible, and a medicine that can be used with complete confidence.
Now, X-Lax has been popular with many doctors and millions of people over the years because pleasant-tasting chocolated X-Lax is effective. Overnight, it helps you toward your normal regularity. X-Lax is gentle. Next morning, it gives you the closest thing to natural action. And that's why many doctors and millions of people use X-Lax with complete confidence. X-Lax, the laxative that helps you toward your normal regularity, gently, overnight. Is X-Lax in your medicine cabinet?
Now, here's our star with something to think about. On account of its Brotherhood Week, Johnny?
John, it's a thought for this week and every week, and it's simply this. In my job, I run across all sorts of people, both the right guys and the wrong ones. And this much I'm sure of. A crook is a crook in any place, in any language. He's just no good. But an honest man, a man who respects the law and the rights of his fellow humans, regardless of his hue, his origin, or his accent, well, believe me, that one is yours truly with Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly. truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Lawrence Dobkin, Forrest Lewis, Frank Gerstle, Herb Vigran, and Tony Barrett. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is John Wall speaking.
Listen next to Suspense on the CBS Radio Network.
Hiya, folks. Jimmy Durante in person. And I'd like to tell you about some of the things that's close to my heart.
Well, Jimmy, I'm sure one thing that's close to everybody's heart is the Heart Fund. And that's especially true today, Heart Sunday.
Hey, that voice sounds very familiar.
Well, it should, Jimmy. It's me, Gary Moore.
That's who that is. Junior.
Yeah, I thought I'd help you tell the folks how important Heart Sunday is.
Everybody wants to get into the act.
Well, I certainly hope you're right, Schnoz. We want everybody to get into the act to help fight our nation's number one health enemy, heart disease. And the best way to do that is by supporting the Heart Fund, our number one defense. You planned to say something like that, didn't you, Jimmy?
I did indeed.
So, friends, when your Heart Fund volunteer calls on you today, Heart Sunday, remember, your dollars will help our scientists develop new and better ways to safeguard healthy hearts and save those that are already afflicted.
Come on, folks. Dig deep for your contributions to the Heart Fund.
Believe me, it'll do your heart good, too.
Radio 59, WROW, with the news service unmatched in the Tri-Cities.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Thank you, lads. Thank you, Ad Council, for that FCC obligation. The first half of the program, we heard the Look Before You Leap matter, episode 678 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, with an original air date of the 28th of February, 1960. My name is Arthur, and you are listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford. Tufts Freeform Radio. For the second half of the program, I'm going to play The Six Shooter. This is episode 38. This is actually the only Six Shooter episode I have yet to play on my program. It's not the last. I played the last one, Myra Barker, episode 39, a couple years ago. But anyway, this one's titled When the Shoe Doesn't Fit, with an original air date of the 17th of June, 1954. Thanks.
In just a moment, you'll hear James Stewart as the Six Shooter. There's music for you tomorrow evening with two of your favorite song stylists. First, it's the Dinah Shore Show, and then Songs with Sinatra. There's laughter, too, in your Friday lineup with three comedy favorites. The Bob Hope Show with Bob's guest Jerry Colonna, the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, and Can You Top This? It's a great Friday night program lineup, all of them heard only on NBC. James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother-of-pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett.
The Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still remembered legends.
It was about 7 o'clock on a Saturday evening, and I was riding down the east trail that led from Castle City over to Crown Ranch. Been a real warm day. A little breeze was coming up now, and things were cooling off, a nice, comfortable twilight. I hadn't seen any signs of habitation for the last few miles. The soil was pretty thin and sandy, probably wouldn't grow much. But a little further on, the ground turned brown, rich-looking. I noticed a frame house sitting back, 50 yards back from the trail. When I was almost even with the house, the front door opened and somebody came running out toward me.
Hey, mister, would you hold up a minute, mister?
Young boy, it looked like, about 15, 16, wearing blue jeans and a checkered shirt and a little peaked cap pulled down over his ears. Whoa, Scar. Whoa, boy. Howdy, son. What can I do for you?
You come from town, mister?
That's right.
You didn't run across Friendly DeWitt on the trail, did you?
Friendly DeWitt?
You know him, don't you, mister? He runs the traveling mercantile.
How's that?
Oh, sure. We're too far out to get into town very much, so he brings around a wagon load of goods every once in a while. I just don't know what we'd do without him.
Well, don't stand out there all night jawing. Just find out about Friendly, like I told you.
The gentleman ain't seen him, ma'am.
Oh, shut up, Fern. You can wear something else if you have to. The supper dishes are waiting, Cindy Lou.
What was that she called you?
Cindy Lou.
But that's a girl's name. Oh. In this light here, the way you were dressed, I sort of thought maybe you were...
It don't matter. Thanks again, mister. So long.
So long. Cindy Lou. Well, I gave Scar a little touch of my heel. Let's go. Come on. We started off. I figured I'd had about 8 miles to go before I'd reached the Crown Ranch. I hadn't been through this part of the country in quite a spell. But I was pretty certain Floyd Prince would remember me from the old days. He'd sign me on for the summer if he had an opening. Come on, Scar. Come on. It was about 15 minutes later, and I came to the fork in the trail. I saw a wagon rolling along from the south. There's some wagon, too. Almost twice the size of anything I'd ever run into before. And the way the canvas bulged out, it looked like it was loaded to the brim. Well, it stood to reason that this was the traveling mercantile that Cindy Lou had mentioned. Whoa, Scar. Whoa.
Whoa, Peggy. Whoa, Peggy. Easy now. Easy there. Howdy, friend.
Good evening. You're Mr. DeWitt, I take it.
You'll take it right, sir, except for that Mr. part. Just call me Friendly, like the rest of the folks. A friend in need is a friend indeed. Something you needin', mister?
No.
Shoelaces, chewing tobacco, flour, salt, kitchen utensils, ammunition, yardage, zone equipment, anything at all. Just you name it, I got it here in my wagon.
Yeah, sounds like quite an assortment there.
Oh, that's only a part of it. I didn't even touch on my medical supplies.
Oh.
Old Doc Bostil's painkiller, Seth's simple all-purpose salve, Miss Jenny's bunion plasters and corn removers. You got any corns that's troubling you, mister? They're just the thing.
No, I don't do too much walking.
Oh. Some liniment, then?
No, thanks, just the same. I'm in pretty good health.
Well, what about wearing apparel? I got a full line of Levi's, shirts, bandanas, cotton and wool socks.
No, I'm just afraid I'm just not in the market for anything, Friendly. The only reason I stopped was to tell you that those folks down the trail are getting kind of anxious about you.
Folks down the trail?
Uh-huh. You know, the farmhouse a couple miles back there.
Well, I just can't imagine who you're talking about, mister. I ain't even headed that way. I'm making a delivery over the Davis Ranch near Evergreen. Davis girl's getting married tomorrow morning. I'm bringing all the paraphernalia for the wedding. You sure somebody in this neighborhood's looking for me?
They seem to be. I don't know the family's name exactly. The girl I bumped into is called Cindy Lou.
Well, that must be Cindy Lou Ames. But why would... Great yellow pumpkins. Patty Ames. That dress she ordered for her daughter Fern. What time you make it out to be, mister? I ain't unpacked my shipment of alarm clocks yet.
Oh, must be 7:30.
Well, maybe I can get there before they leave. If I don't, Hattie Ames will skin me alive. Giddy up, Petty. Come on now. Come on, Francis. Come on. I knew there was something else. And I was working on that dress only this morning, too. Shortening the hem. So long, mister. Hope you enjoy the square dance.
Dance? What are you... Come on, Scar. Come on. Dance? What are you talking about?
Well, that's where you're heading, ain't it? The town ranch?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it is. But I didn't know about any dance or anything. I was going to ask Floyd Prince for a job.
Oh, you mean tell me you ain't heard about the celebration tonight?
No, not a word.
Well, it's a count of Floyd Prince's son. He just come home from schooling back east.
Well, you mean Monty Prince?
Yeah, that's the boy's name. You know him, mister?
Oh, I used to. He was just a little shaver then. He's all grown up, huh?
Well, he must be 20 or so, somewhere along in there. I guess he'll be taking over the crown one of these days.
I see. Well, I reckon better put off my job hunting until some other time. I wouldn't want to bother Floyd and give him a party. I'll ride along with you for a spell, Friendly.
Well, if you're an acquaintance of Floyd Prince's, I imagine you'd be more than welcome at his party. In fact, everybody in the neighborhood's been invited.
Maybe so. But fact is, I'm not too good at square dancing. I don't know, but there's just something about my legs. A little too much of them, I reckon.
Well, I just hope you're the only absentee.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, Hattie's daughter, Fern, she was planning to wear this here dress tomorrow, ordered from me.
Oh.
Yeah, like as not, she's having a tantrum right now. She sure takes after Hattie.
She does, huh?
Yes, sir. And mind not delivering her outfit on time, well, there'll be a real catastrophe. You see, Hattie's aiming to marry her Fern off to this young Monty Prince. And she'll probably manage it, too. Hattie usually gets her own way.
Uh-oh.
Look over there, mister. Buggy coming up the trail. That'll be Hattie and Fern on the way to the crown.
Yeah, I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Well, it's too late to do anything about the dress now if they're started off. Yeah, the best thing for me to do is to stay out of sight. I'll get my wagon over here under these trees here. Well, but, easy, Francis, easy. No,
but what are you... They're bound to see you sitting there.
Oh, you don't know Hattie Ames like I do.
What do you mean?
Why, she's as near-sighted as a buffalo. Can't see her hand in front of her face unless she's wearing her bifocals.
Oh.
And she won't be wearing them either. Not if she's heading for Shindig.
Well, what about the daughter?
Well, I told you, Fern takes after her mother. She's as blind as a bat without her spectacles.
I see.
Here they come. There? What did they tell you?
Oh, doggone. They never even glanced over toward us, did they?
No, not a glance. Well, I guess I might as well mosey over to the Davis Ranch. Nice meeting you, Mr.
Oh, I'm sorry, Friendly. I meant to introduce myself. My name's Ponsett, Brick Ponsett.
Oh. Oh! Why, Mr. Ponsett, I didn't recognize you.
Oh, no reason why you should, Friendly. No reason you should.
Well, I heard so much about you. And that gun. Here, Mr. Ponsett, here. I got me some samples of a new hair tonic. Smells real elegant, too. Maybe you'd like to try it. They say it'll grow fuzz on... Not that there's anything matter with your hair, you understand?
Well, my supply is kind of decreasing. A little tonic might be very handy.
All right, sir. Just a second now. I got it right back here. Yeah. It is.
Ah, thanks, Friendly.
My pleasure, Mr. Ponsett. My pleasure. Well, I...
Say, I just happened to think, what happened to the other daughter?
Hmm?
Well, that buggy that just went by, there were only two women in it. Now, the girl I met back at the farm, she wasn't...
Oh, you mean Cindy Lou. Well, she wouldn't be going to Prince's dance.
She wouldn't have.
No, no. You see, Hattie ain't got much use for her. Cindy ain't Hattie's real kin. She's just stepdaughter.
Oh.
Yeah, Hattie and Fern, well, they just seem to go out of their way to make things miserable for her. Like this here dance, for instance. Everybody knows that Monty Prince and Cindy Lou used to be real friendly when they was kids. Well, she'd probably give her eye tooth to go to that party tonight, see him again, but... Well...
It's too bad she can't.
Yeah, but there's nothing anybody can do about it. Why, she don't even have a dress to her name. You know, I've got a hunch she'd be real pretty if Hattie ever allowed her to fix herself up.
Well, she seemed a mighty nice-looking girl to me.
Yeah, sure is. Yeah.
What's the matter?
Why shouldn't Cindy Lou go to that dance tonight? With all the stuff in this wagon, I could fix her up so she'd be the prettiest girl there.
Well, maybe you could, Friendly. Maybe you could.
It'd sure be a good trick to play on Hattie and Fern. Why, if they couldn't tell my wagon at 50 feet, they'd never know Cindy Lou when I got done with her. Come on, Mr. Ponsett.
Why?
Well, a girl can't go to square dance all by herself. She's got to have an escort.
Oh, I suppose so, but... Oh, now, hold on, Friendly. What, you don't mean me?
Well, you're a friend of the prince's. You said so yourself.
Why, I'm old enough to be her...
If we don't hurry, Mr. Ponsett, square dance will be all over. Come on, step lively there, Francis. Come on there, Peggy. Let's start traveling. Come on, Mr. Portrait.
I just don't understand, Mr. DeWitt. You mean you want to loan me a dress?
And all the trimmings, Cindy Lou. Before I get done with you, you'll be so dooted up that your own stepmother won't recognize you.
And you want to take me to the dance, Mr. Ponson?
Yeah, sure. That is, if you want to go. Yeah.
Well, that's right kindly of you both, but the fact is, I don't have no interest in attending the doings at the Crown.
Oh, you don't, huh? Well, in that case...
I don't know where you ever got such a notion, Mr. DeWitt. As if I cared anything about seeing Monty Prince again. Why, I haven't even thought of him since he went away to school. Not once.
Mm-hmm. Well, I reckon your stepsister Fern's done some thinking about him.
A lot of good it'll do her. Monty wouldn't look to... I mean, it's none of my business, one way or the other.
No, I guess it is. I'm sorry we bothered you. Let's go, Friendly.
Okay, Mr. Ponson. Night, Cindy Lou.
Mr. DeWitt.
Mm-hmm. Was there something you wanted, Cindy?
I guess maybe I'm acting kind of ungrateful. I mean, well, you both did put yourself out for me, and it was real generous of you to do it. I don't suppose it would do me no harm to go to that square dance. For a little while, anyway. If you really want me to.
Well, now, that's more like it. Let's see now. The first thing we got to do is find a dress. You come on out to my wagon, Cindy. We'll pick something that'll make you look like a princess. Yes, sir, a real princess.
Well, I want to tell you, Friendly wasn't very far wrong. That's just exactly how Cindy Lou looked when she came out of that bedroom about half an hour later. And for a minute, we just stood there, just not saying a word, just staring at her.
Is something wrong? Don't I look good enough to go to the dance?
Good enough? Why, Cindy Lou, you're as pretty as a picture. Ain't she, Brad?
Why, she sure is. Well... If you're all ready, Cindy, well...
There's just one thing. We forgot the shoes.
Shoes?
I don't have any party slippers of my own.
Oh. well, you see, Cindy Lou, that's about the only item I don't stock in my wagon. I guess you can make do with the shoes you're wearing, can't you?
Oh, I don't see how. I mean, well, look at them yourself.
No, wait. I am carrying one pair of fancy slippers. They're part of the Davis girl's wedding outfit.
Well?
No. I couldn't loan them to Cindy, though. I got to leave for the Davis ranch as soon as you two start off for the dance. I promise I'd be there first thing in the morning, and it's a good 8 hours' drive in that wagon of mine.
Oh, I see.
Well, it was real nice of you both, anyhow. I'll never forget what you tried to do for me and how I felt when I put on this dress. How wonderful.
Now, hold on, Cindy. Hold on.
It's all right.
Just let me do some figuring here. Let's see. If I was to leave here by midnight, I could be at the Davis place long about 8 a.m. That ought to be early enough. Well, ain't no reason why you both couldn't be back here before 12 o'clock, is
no,
there?
No reason at all.
Well, then I guess the next thing to do is to find out whether them slippers will fit or not. I'll bring them right in.
Well, I just don't know what to say, Mr. Ponce. Nothing like this has ever happened to me before. It all seems like something out of a storybook.
You know, Cindy, I was just thinking the same thing.
Well, here you are, Cindy. Try them on.
Gee, they sure do look small, don't they?
Mm. Yeah? You think you can make it?
Oh, I don't... Oh, there. Oh, it is kind of tight, but I...
Well, try the other one. If you can get one on, the other ought to go, too.
There.
Good. Now, you going to be able to walk all right?
Oh, I'll be able to walk all right, Mr. DeWitt. The way I feel, I could almost fly.
Well, then you better get started. You won't have too long at the dance, you know. And don't forget, Brett. You gotta have her back here by midnight.
Don't worry, Friendly. I won't forget.
You are listening to James Stewart as the Six Shooter, the story of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman whose name has become legend throughout the Great Southwest. Now, Act Two of the story called When the Shoe Doesn't Fit.
I hoisted Cindy Lou up on Scar, and she managed to seat herself in front of the saddle. I kind of held on to her, keep her from falling off, and we started off for the Crown Ranch. It took us about 45 minutes to get there, and that party was in full swing when we walked into the parlor. Lloyd Prince came over to the door when he saw us and told me we're more than welcome. He's real nice, considering I'd invited myself. I sort of managed to avoid mentioning Cindy Lou's name, and what with all the hubdub, Floyd didn't seem to notice that I hadn't introduced her properly. But Floyd's son, Monty, well, he didn't wait for any introduction. He just took one look at Cindy, and that was the last I saw of her. As far as I could tell, the other girls at the party were just completely out of the picture from then on. I waited until there was an intermission and the dancing, and then I moseyed over to the punch bowl.
Oh, can I help you, Mr. Ponsett?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
I'm Mrs. Ames. Hattie Ames.
Oh, how do, Miss Ames?
Oh, Fern. Fern. Over here, dear. I want you to meet somebody. This is my daughter, Fern, Mr. Ponsett.
I'm pleased to meet you, Fern.
Well, speak up, speak up. Fern, sort of shy.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, that young lady that you brought to the party, she doesn't seem to be spending much time with you, does she? Oh, that's the trouble when a man brings a pretty girl to a dance. He's apt to find himself all alone. Fern, stop your fidgeting. Of course, now, some girls have character as well as look.
All right, I now, say. Grab your partners for the next dance. Now, everybody, go in.
Oh, my goodness, they're starting another dance. Now, Mr. Ponsett, don't think that you have to ask my permission to dance with Fern. You just go right ahead.
Fern? Like I said, I'm not much of a square dancer, but there just didn't seem to be any way of turning Fern down. Well, I guess I should say there wasn't any way of turning her mother down. So, we did our best. Sorry, Fern. As the evening wore on, it didn't look like she had any other part lined up. Well, I figured it was up to me to sort of fill in. I sure didn't mean to kick you, Fern. There's one thing about her, though. She sure didn't talk a man to death. And somehow the time passed, and the next thing I knew, it was after 11 o'clock. Now, that meant Cindy and I had to be starting home, so I looked around for her, but she wasn't in sight. I excused myself for Fern and headed out the front porch. Cindy was there all right. But the thing that surprised me was she was all alone. Looked like she'd been crying. Cindy.
Oh. Oh, Mr. Ponsett.
What, are you all right?
Oh, I'm fine. Just fine.
Where's Monty?
I don't know.
Well, maybe you'd better find him and say goodnight.
I never want to see him again. Not as long as I live.
Oh. Well, what happened? I thought you two were hitting off real good there.
I thought so, too, at first. While we were inside dancing, everything was just wonderful. And then, all of a sudden, he started acting like he didn't care about me at all. said he couldn't be spending all his time with one girl. He had to dance with some of the others.
Mm-hmm. Well, after all, the party is in his honor.
And that ain't all, Mr. Ponsett. He didn't even know who I was.
Well, didn't you tell him?
Well, I thought sure he'd know. I never figured he'd forget me, not in just a few years.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've changed, Cindy, and the way you're all fixed up tonight.
Oh, that wouldn't matter. Not if Monty really liked me. I'd never forget him. I'd know him no matter how much he changed or how he dressed.
Well, all you had to do was just tell him who you were, you know.
No, I just couldn't. And you mustn't tell him either. You've got to promise me you won't. Now, please, Mr. Ponson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if that's what you want. Well, I think maybe we'd better leave.
Yeah. Well, I'm ready.
You got everything?
I guess so. Why?
I don't know. I just thought maybe you'd lost one of your slippers or...
My slippers? Whatever gave you that idea?
I don't know. I just sort of crossed my mind somehow. Never mind. I'll get Scott. Well, it just goes to show you that stories in real life don't work out the same way. Instead of falling in love, Cindy and Monty Prince were just far away as ever, even farther. And there didn't seem to be any way of getting them together either. Leastways, he wasn't going to be able to do it by finding one of her slippers at the dance, that's for sure. As a matter of fact, she couldn't have lost a shoe at the dance if she'd wanted to. When we got her home, we found out she couldn't even get them off.
Doggone it, Cindy, you must not be trying. Well, you didn't have as much trouble getting them on.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. DeWitt. I'm doing my best. My feet must have swelled up from the dancing or something.
Let me do it.
Oh, sure.
Why, they're just plain stuck fast.
I know. Maybe in the morning my feet will go back to normal. And
yeah.
Then
hey, look out the window there, Friendly. Isn't that a buggy out there?
Holy smoke. Fern and Hattie. So long, Cindy. Bye, Britt.
Oh, wait a minute, Friendly. I don't want them catching me here either.
But what about the slippers and the wedding tomorrow?
The bride's wearing a long dress. Reaches clear down to the floor. She can get married in the bare feet if she has to.
Well, thanks for everything.
Good night, Cindy. I'm sorry things didn't work out better for you, but good night. Well, along about noontime the next day, I was in my hotel room washing up for Sunday dinner. They were planning to serve fried chicken and corn fritters and apple pie. The Castle Hotel always put the food on family style, so I figured I'd better be real prompt or there wouldn't be any... Yeah? Yeah, come in. Oh, Monty. Oh, what are you doing in town?
I came to see you, Mr. Ponsett.
Oh, is that so?
It's about that girl you brought out to the Crown last night.
Well, I sort of had the impression you weren't too interested in her.
Oh, I'm interested, all right. I wish I wasn't, but I am.
How's that?
Well, you see, Mr. Ponsett, before I went back east, I was, I was real fond of another girl. Cindy Lou Ames, her name is.
Oh.
And we sort of promised that we'd wait for each other. But last night, that girl with you, well, she sort of made me forget Cindy.
She did, huh?
For a while, anyway. And then I remembered, and I felt real bad because it didn't seem like I was being fair to Cindy. So I went inside, and I left the other girl to herself. But doggone it, all night long, I kept thinking about both girls, and they sort of got mixed up in my mind. I couldn't even keep them straight.
Uh-huh. You've got quite a problem there, haven't you?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Good morning, Mr. Ponsett. I finally managed to get... Oh.
Cindy Lou.
Hello, Monty.
Golly, it's good to see you. I was hoping you'd be at the dance last night.
Were you?
You know, you haven't changed a bit.
No, I guess I haven't. They're in this paper bag, Mr. Ponsett. Those things I borrowed last night.
Oh.
I thought maybe you could return them to Mr. DeWitt for me.
Well, I'm not sure I'll be running into him again, Cindy.
Here, Mr. Ponsett. Now, be careful. Don't...
Oh,
Mr. Ponsett.
Oh, doggone it, Cindy. I just sort of slipped out of my fingers. Well, here, I'll put these party shoes back in the sack. There.
Well, goodbye, and thanks. Goodbye, Monty.
Cindy, wait a minute. Where'd you get those shoes?
I don't know what you mean.
Why, they're the same ones that... They're exactly the same. Cindy Lou, you were at the square dance last night. You and that other girl... Why, there wasn't any other girl. It was you. No wonder I couldn't get you straightened out in my...
What are you talking about?
Tell her, Mr. Ponsett, what I told you just before she came in.
Well, I think maybe you'd better tell her yourself, Monty. As a matter of fact, I'm kind of anxious to get downstairs while there's still some fried chicken left, so...
Now, you listen to me, Cindy. I've been in love with you ever since I can remember.
I don't believe
it. Well, it's true. And it doesn't matter what kind of a dress you wear or how your hair is fixed or...
Well, there wasn't much point in my hanging around to see if Cindy and Monty would finally get together. There's only one way a story like this can end. I guess you know as well as I do. They were just bound to live happily ever after.
The Six Shooter is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is written by Frank Burt and is based on a character created by him. Mr. Stewart may currently be seen in the Universal International picture The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Barbara Eiler as Cindy Lou and Eleanor Audley, Sandra Gould, Bill Johnstone, and Sam Edwards. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. This is John Wald speaking. Hear MacDonald Carey in Jason and the Golden Fleece tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
For the second half of the program, we heard episode 38 of my favorite radio drama, The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart. That was titled When the Shoe Doesn't Fit, with an original air date of the 17th of June, 1954. My name has been Arthur, and this has been The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Thanks for listening. This show has been previously recorded.